Welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast with me, Kathy Love. I'm a business coach who helps allied health professionals run powerful and profitable businesses in the disability sector. Join me for cutting-edge interviews with leaders in the allied health and business fields, along with plenty of practical content that you can use to make your business practice perfect. We are on the podcast, and I have really been looking forward to having Narelle Hippotides join as a guest, who, before I hit record, described herself as the accidental business owner. I'm sure we will hear more about that. Narelle, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for hearing my story.
Ah, love your story. Love your story. Now, if we can start with the story, your story into private practice is a little different to other people's.
It is, because I started just as a clinician working in a small private practice where there were two of us, and we gradually built up to four people, and then the manager developed cancer. And I probably sat on the fence for a long time looking after it while she was sick, but then when she got sick the second time, I had to step forward and go, yep, I'm going to buy the business, because it meant my job and the two other younger therapists that I had, which made a big change, because I was used to just going, that's Pauline's job, I just see the client. So I had to really take on another tack that I'd never really wanted to do, because I had opportunities when she bought the practice to buy it, and I decided, no, it's the wrong time of my life, I'm happy just seeing clients. So things changed rapidly after that.
Yeah. And the business that we're talking about is MacArthur Pediatric Occupational Therapy, and you're in Sydney. So here you are, you've got a piece of paper saying, I now own a business. What happened then?
It was a really extreme learning curve. One of Pauline's big advice was to put on an admin person straight away, and we'd never actually had an admin person. She did it, and her husband would help out with the books. So when I took over, that was the best advice. So someone else looked after the figures, and because the business was already profitable, I didn't actually have to worry about that side of it. To start with, I have learnt I have to know my numbers, and not just know my numbers, understand what those numbers mean, but that's been a gradual learning curve. And I could concentrate on the staff that I had and ensuring, because they were young staff, that they had the skills they needed, but also weren't getting stressed. So I did some things naively to start with, like if the waiting list got too big and the staff got too stressed, I'd put on another staff member. But I learnt down the track there's always going to be a waiting list in MacArthur, and there's always going to be stress for staff. So it was learning to other ways of managing waiting lists and dealing with those issues with staff. So that's been a gradual learning curve of how to balance that.
Yeah. So what does your team look like at the moment? What Six years on.
So we've gone from three of us and no admin staff to two sites with 10 therapists and 2.5 administration, or we call it the client and finance team. So we're gradually taking off roles that us as clinicians were doing, chasing up our own clients and fees and all of that sort of thing, and handing it back to our client and finance team. So we're still working out all those details. So while we had one to start with, then we put 12 months ago put on another person, and just before COVID I put someone else on that we put off, but we've now just re-employed in that position because we're back face to face and we need those people around. So
it's just so amazing to hear those words, that there were two or three of us with no admin and now we're 10 with, you know, growing customer service support.
And I think that's important. Like if any feedback from staff is, I really love Carol, I really love Jenny, I like what they're doing. And for everything that they do, it means they're free to do more client things or client related activities, but then means we actually bring in more money to pay for that admin. So it's been like a trade-off, and that's how I've tried to sell it to staff. If you do one more client, then we can have one more admin person and that sort of thing. So try to bring them along with for the ride so they understand what that is to them and the business.
Yeah. You've got a lot of love in your team, and some of your teammates have had really tough times over the last year or so. And whilst we don't need to tell their story, what leadership skills have you developed in the last couple of years?
I think just being open and listening to the needs of staff. But I think the staff make it easy to, because they're willing to come up and tell me when there are issues and what's going on. And then as a team, we've been able to work out how to support that person and support the clients, but also making sure that person have their needs met. So me taking the time to listen to their story, make adaptations to their caseload, that sort of thing, has been really important.
Yeah, but they're really cohesive. They really care about each other. What do you think has kind of created that?
I think it comes down to some of it's luck, but also when I have recruited.
Eye roll.
I try to involve the staff in that process, so meeting people that are coming through, having some of them on the panel, but also engaging in other activities. So not just in the office, but going out for dinner. Because COVID's really fresh, we had lots of competitions to keep staff engaged. So putting things online, which just kept people connected, and I think that's been important. And even without me doing things, they will get together after work. And so really pushing that work-life balance, and we talk about that often. And if we're too far one way, so if work is becoming their primary focus, really looking at, well, what can we change so we can get that balance? Because if they're not achieving in both fields, both at work and at home, then they're not producing the best when they are with our clients. So really trying to keep those communications open. And I don't have to say anything. My staff do it without me. Or they come and tap me on the shoulder when they've noticed something that I've missed. Have you noticed that so-and-so is at this point or is not doing? I think that's level of communication is great.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful. So, yeah, you've mentioned COVID a few times. I think it's burnt into the cells and the synaptic junctions of business owners globally. How have you guys navigated COVID in the last 3 or 4 months?
I think it comes back to that team approach. So everybody was really on board as soon as we started noticing a decrease mostly in our school visits to start with schools. Probably 50 to 60% of our work is in schools and going out to preschools and primary schools and doing some community activities where we run some play groups. When they started to close up, we started looking very quickly and we jumped on board at doing online or telehealth. And the staff as a team started developing resources and developing performers. So we jumped onto CoView, and so we would get together as a team and talk about how we were going to do it, how we were going to communicate that with clients, getting standard emails out. And probably all the therapists did better than I did, because I was busy doing the making sure everything was happening. So my clients may have missed an email or two, but they were getting their emails out, telling their parents how to get online, what technology they needed, what resources they needed to do that. And so the majority of therapists maintained their wages right through. So nothing significant. I thought we were going to have a significant drop, but after the first few weeks, it bounced back up again with either providing packages, doing home programs, or doing online. Transitioned really quickly.
Yep. What did you learn about the business during those COVID months? We're still in them, but
what did I learn? I think there's a lot of resilience in the business, and there's a lot of resilience in my staff to adapt and change. And some of the ones that I thought would adapt quickly were the ones that were slowest, which was interesting. So I saw other qualities in my staff members, but they all rallied around each other to make sure that happened. I also had to, coming back to my statement about knowing the numbers, I had to look at my numbers a bit more to make sure I was covering the bills and doing all of those sorts of things. So while we were quickly upskilling in one direction, it really made me not just go, oh, I'm profitable, I don't need to worry. I did need to just be more aware of where those things were. It made me look at our policies and procedures about working from home and looking at our risk assessments again and writing all those risk assessments so we were ready to be working at home, because initially the first couple of weeks I thought, oh, yeah, we'll be coming into the office. But when we went totally online, it was just easier for people to be at home, to have their workspaces worked out. And so they were really good at sending photos back and showing me where they were working, how they were working, that sort of thing. So pulling that together. But then we had to then backtrack and unwind it again as we've come back into the clinic and then write different risk assessments of how to be in the clinic and how to be safe in the clinic and what clients we will still keep online and what clients we would prefer to keep face-to-face. And I actually need to give our clients a little pat on the back, because they've worked really hard with us. They've worked hard at, yes, we want to keep service up, but if we're not well, they ring up, hey, can we just do an online session today rather than come into the clinic, that sort of thing, which has meant our cancellations have been less than what they could have been as we've come back into the clinic. So it's not just my team, it's my team of clients and out there that have worked well. And the same with our clients and finance team. We had a remote office for a couple of months and they've been in and out. So they've all adapted and made changes really quickly.
Would it be a bit of a stretch to say that the business has improved through COVID?
It's improved heaps because, as I said, we've always had a waiting list. We haven't really had to market that sort of thing, but it meant we got on board and have generated an electronic newsletter, which we've now talking about will go out three times a term and how what we will communicate in those times. So we've put on so we've got our newsletter. We, over COVID, got Stripe up so people could pay and it was convenient to pay. So our income kept coming through. We looked at electronic forms, and fillable forms, which we're still doing, but they were all because we're offline. But it also made me look at what staff we had, and I realised that one of our OTs had a background in this before she became an OT. So she was doing more of that and is continuing to do more of that, and eventually we'll bring back more clinical role. But it made us look more broadly at what all our skills are and our strengths are to increase that technology. And so those things have put us instead, and now we're back to keep going with that technology.
Yeah. I was thinking earlier that this time last year you were deep in audit prep. And I just wanted to ask about whether that audit work and developing those risk assessment documents and strengthening policies and procedures, whether that helped you through COVID at all.
I think it made me look at things like the risk assessments, looked at the process. It's made me much more aware. I think private practices, and having been in private practice for a long time, when we were just little practices where people came in, handed their money over and left again, the audit process made us look at more the whole business model and just our accountability, but also our clinical practices and how we did things. So I think having those in place, it meant that we were ready to then look at the next thing rather than go just into crisis manage and shut up shop and go, we're closing for whatever number of months, cross our fingers. Yeah. And having more staff, there was a responsibility of having that all organised so we kept them employed. I must say the first couple of weeks I went, yeah, we'll probably have our 30% decrease, but that never came.
Not even close, yeah.
So, yeah. So talking to the accountant and stuff, he just looked at me and laughed when I just looked at things like JobKeeper. I went, well, I'm just looking at the whole thing. So having all those things in place certainly helped.
Yeah. You are just speaking so magnificently as a CEO and a business owner, but I happen to know that you are an OT at heart. So we are going to go there. We are going to maybe ask about what your week looks like, because there is still a bit of OT happening in the diary, isn't there?
There is a lot of OT, and you'd probably not like it, but I probably still do 50-50. Weeks like this week, because we're moving a clinical office downstairs to create another clinical office, clinical space upstairs. Mm-hmm. It's probably been more on the business side, but I still like to keep in touch with clients. I really like that relationship with clients, but I also think it keeps me in touch with our own policies and procedures. So we've just updated, because we've made all these changes over the last 3 months, updating our NDIS clients and process. So it allows me to make sure what I'm writing and expecting staff to do, I can actually do myself, that it's actually practical. So my clients give me my buzz. I do, the pat on the back, and when clients go, when there's a problem, I put my Narelle hat on and think, what would Narelle tell me? I still get a buzz out of clients going, I solved it myself, but because we've put the work in to start with. So I think it's important that I keep some clinical role, and I've learned over the last 6 years I need to have that business hat and put that in. But at the same time, I still need to keep my seesaw balance with what is work and what is my leisure, and it not just become one continuous thing.
So, yeah. It's kind of interesting to toss around the idea that what team and systems and automation and technology and what sort of business stuff do you need for you to, you know, still do the amount of clinical work that gives you that buzz?
I think it really comes back to our client and finance team. If they're organised, if they're chasing up the few debtors that we have, but they think it's a lot of money, I think, but in comparison to what we've got coming in, it's not a lot. But by them being on top of their game, but then being able to take initiative and tap me on the shoulder and not be worried about saying, Narelle, we need to look at this. So giving them not the autonomy but allowing them to keep things going. Without them, I couldn't do what I do. So having a good bookkeeper, having an accountant that knows what's happening, certainly means that I can duck into my clinical role and
disappear.
And that's what it feels like, because some days I think I don't want to open this door, because then I have to put my business hat back on. These days I just want to be a clinician. That's the honesty. I enjoy being an OT. And having been an OT for 32 years and only a business owner for 6 years, it's hard to take the clinician out of me.
I think there's also another player in your team, and we don't need to name her, but let's acknowledge her. You have a remarkable senior clinician who shares that clinical load and clinical governance and coaching as well. What difference has that made for the way your time is divvied up?
I think knowing there's someone that is really has a vested interest in the business and has openly said, if you ever leave, I want the business, whatever. And I don't know what my long-term plans are. I know 6 years ago I said I might only be here for 10 years, but that's really changed, and I'm seeing that there's a future that's more than 4 years in the future now. But having Talita, who has a vested interest in it, wants to work at it like it's her own, and will take on the supervision of other students, other clinicians. So what we've actually developed in the last little while is more a senior team. So they look after some of our younger therapists. I look at the senior therapists and some of the other therapists that don't need as much supervision, but then I try and look after the wellbeing of the whole team. So Talita is really good at supporting that. She also keeps an eye on the second site, so I don't feel like I need to try and know what's happening at both sites all the time. She knows what's happening at Campbelltown. I know what's happening here at Raby, and then we get together once a week. I still have to, and she's probably where I was 6 years ago. She really finds that balance between being a clinician and knowing the business really hard, but that's why I'm trying to encourage her to be part of supervision when I am making decisions about budgets and that sort of thing, trying to make her aware of where we spend our money, where we can make cutbacks, but where I'm happy. If a therapist is bored with a toy, I would prefer to buy more toys. It's not necessarily our clients are, but therapists need change as well. So just telling her where this is a budget where I'm happy you to spend more on, and this is where maybe down the track we could spend less on, that sort of thing.
Yeah, so bringing her into that more business strategy and business tactic conversation.
Definitely, because it's not necessarily taught through uni, and I think it's something that, I'll just run the business. And that's where I was 6 years ago. I just need to do this. But NDIS has shown me that there is a lot more, and you have taught me that there's even more. But just having those procedures in place, making sure people are consistent. I don't want to make clones of every therapist has to work like Talita or I, but these are our goals and our vision for MPOT, and this is where the types of service we want to provide for our clients. So we're all on the same page. Someone else can walk into a client, and while our personalities will be different, our functional goals are going to be the same for that client. So it's working those things through.
Yeah. Do you enjoy the financial management and the team development and the business side of things more and more?
I do. It's something that still stresses me out, because I'm the shy introvert that likes to be hidden in my clinical room and not be seen. Being the boss, you can't hide. And I'll talk to my therapist about putting a mask on, that I nearly need to put a mask on to become the boss. It's becoming more me, but I really have to step outside myself to be out there. And even talking to you like this, it's outside my comfort level. So I have to really find something inside me to step out. But I'm slowly starting to enjoy that activity. It's taken a long time, and I must say we did a training day in the last school holidays where we did the first part was a COVID debrief, and we talked about our successes and the things that we could do better in the future, and what we want to keep and what we want to prune away as we move forward into the end of 2020 and where we want to move 2021. And I actually enjoyed setting it up, processing it, presenting it, seeing the team work and talk together. So seeing their growth through that has been really good as well. So, yes, I am enjoying it, but it is still stressful because it's not a natural part of my personality.
Yeah. Growing into it. Great. It's great. On the topic of growing, how do you develop your team? How do you develop your customer service team, your finance team, your clinical team?
Okay. I really think education is really important. So we do internal education. So we run staff meetings once a fortnight where we have some education within that. Some of it's just feedback from training, that sort of thing. I'm really keen to support ongoing education, so looking in supervision meetings at what areas people want to develop and supporting and paying for that. As far as the client finance team, encouraging them to do more training and to look. So it's not just therapists, because I think of our front of house team is up to date with things, and that's been a bit harder, because I think they're happy that this works, why are we changing it? But sometimes we need to work to change things to grow. And that's something I've learned in the last 6 years, just because the systems work. It's like I took over an office that had paper and files, and I had a whole storage shed of old files. But having to take a system, and we went on to Clinico, where we can not have paper and we can scan. We just need to keep doing those. So I think that education and continually encouraging people to educate themselves and to read and look at things is a really important process. And part of our appraisals this year, staff have asked for more team looking at our clients and looking at, well, yes, we've got all these resources and we all know about zones of regulation, but how do you use it and how do you use it? So we're going to build more of that into our staff meeting time. So it's not just the supervisor and a person talking, but it's a whole team talking about, yeah, I would approach this slightly different. So we're always learning about how the team can grow and how education is important and adapting it to the needs of the staff.
Yeah. A few minutes ago, you mentioned, you know, the business towards the end of 2020, and you just sort of threw your arms out to 2021.
And that's
just
part of,
out there.
Part of our education day was saying, my team's only as good as the staff that are here, and I'd like you to stay. And that was one of the things that Talita has really enjoyed, taking on the second site. So I put it out there that to stay may be that you take on another site in the future, or because I know from appraisals some of my staff do eventually want to build to either having their own practice or have more responsibility. They want to see a career path, and it's either me stay small and they leave, or do we look at it as a team? And that's one of the things, even with one of the mature age therapists that has drawn my team in the last 12 months, has said, it's so nice to have a team of OTs that can talk to each other and share ideas. And I'll walk into where they're working when they're doing paperwork, and they'll be reviewing a client with, oh, I've got this client and this is not working, what can we do, that sort of thing. So they're doing it without realising. So how to keep that without losing staff and build up that. And that probably will mean another site or, yeah, more people within one site, because I think there's probably a need for at least 3 or 4 therapists working out of one office at a time, and I make my staff work over both offices. And that means there's 10 of us giving different ideas, that sort of thing, and I think that's important that they have a whole different approach.
Different perspective,
perspectives, rather than being insular and just working within themselves. So,
So what do you think business is going to be like in the next 12 months? Here's a crystal ball.
Well, that's my favourite saying. I don't have a crystal ball, so I don't know.
What do you think? What's your best guess?
I would like to say I would be able to employ, because we have thrown the idea of employing other therapists, other OTs. We haven't attracted anyone. But I do see our team growing. How that grows and how big it grows will just depend on the future. We have 170-something names on a waiting list, so there's the capacity there as far as clients go. But I also need to look at the other side, that we tend to attract younger therapists. How do I support them so that they can provide a service that meets those goals and visions that we were talking about before? Because a lot of our clients, a lot of those people on our waiting list, well, not a lot, but some of them have been to other practices, and their first comment is, I've been told this is a good practice, I don't want a new grad. You can have a new grad as long as that new grad is supported to work through things. So it's not putting too many demands on the young therapist too quickly, upskilling them in the skills that they need, giving them the support to problem solve those clients, that sort of thing. So if we ask that person down the track, they're not going, oh, it was a new grad. They're saying, so-and-so provided me with X, Y, and Z.
So what else do you think is on sort of the business calendar the next 12 months? Maybe building some team. What else?
I don't know. We've got to move into our new office at the end of the week. That's probably the next thing.
You know I'm a fan of a micro plan. If it's a week, it's a week.
Let's go
as long as there's a plan.
Next week it's moving to the office downstairs. Then it's converting what was the office area into another treatment room, which will then give us more scope for that extra therapist to work, that sort of thing. And then still looking at how that breakup, which we've talked about before, of clinic days and community days, because school visits are still very popular. And most of the schools out here are still very keen to have therapists and work with us. So it's building that around. We are doing some home visits, but it's trying to balance that with still using the clinic rooms, that sort of thing. So really building on those skills as well.
Yeah. So potentially consolidating that service delivery model that you've got where the rooms are optimised, where there's community services as well. Sounds good. What are you looking forward to across the rest of 2020?
Well, I don't think there is going to be any return to normal. I think we need to move forward.
There is no normal, Narelle. Let me just manage your expectations.
I'm well past that. We talked about concrete feet syndrome, and we're not flexing back to what it was before COVID started. We actually have to move forward. And so we're moving forward with technology. We're moving forward with how we engage with our clients in the sense of coming to reception, where before they just come straight into the therapist and then it'll be, oh, have they paid, have they signed, that sort of thing. So just trying to streamline that flow right from the time they step in the door at both practices. So I actually see a building of our revenue over the next 6 months to Christmas. And then looking at how we develop those either one or two positions into 2021.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think in 12 months' time you'll be 50-50 OT, 50-50 boss?
Certainly I'm working towards that, and there are times that I do slip into that. I think I got into some bad habits again during COVID where I'd pick up extra clients, or I actually spread my clinical days over more days, which meant I was in the office more days. I'm actually much more productive when I have a business day at home and I just stick to that. I'm working on business. So 2021, I need to get back to having, this is a day I don't come to the office. So I'm still contactable, but I don't come to the office. So re-looking at my timetable and blocking out spaces. And you tell me I could do it now, but I've put clients in around, and so I will redo it and be I'm much better at the beginning of the year going, no, this is my day off, this is this time. And where it's something I never used to do, but really blocking out those times for this is paperwork, this is when I'm doing my client paperwork, this is my business paperwork, this is my supervision. So I need to get back into that.
That structure has served you well. It serves most people well so that you kind of put some boundaries in around tasks.
I need to do
now. All right, well, I'll leave that with you. You missed out on a beautiful, beautiful holiday overseas. Many people missed out on holidays. Have you got a staycation kind of blocked out in your calendar between now and the end of the year?
My plan is to probably have 2 weeks off next school holidays. We haven't booked anywhere, but that's what we're talking about and sort of starting to get some ideas, because I'm starting to feel tired. Because it has been a busy, I spent the first part of the year, and I spent 2 years planning to be off for 3 months. So I felt like I got to that point and then COVID came, and so I had to continue.
You just about had your bags packed.
Just about. And what we're doing downstairs was going to be after COVID, but then I just went, no, let's just do it now. So by the end of this term, that should be finished. This, we tend to run groups during the holidays. The staff like doing that, so I will just leave them to it and have a couple of weeks off and some downtime.
Good. Good to hear. I'm tending to hear that business owners are ploughing on through and that there's more and more to do, and that they typically would have had a week here, a week there, 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks for a sneaky little trip overseas. But everyone is of the sense of, you know, ploughing through and getting to the end of it. And I'm not sure that that's sustainable. So I'm delighted that you've got that, that time somewhat scheduled. What about your team? Are they kind of scheduling some leave as well?
Yep, most of my team tend to work, because we're predominantly school-based, so we work around school terms. So most therapists work 1 week and then have part of the second week of the school holidays off or a whole week. Some will take a week off. I've got one staff member away now, but most tend to do it during the school holidays, and then we will shut down at Christmas time for probably 2 to 3 weeks. Because well-being is so important. If they don't balance that side out, they're not fit for our care, fit to work in the clinic with clients, that sort of thing. And I also think our families need a break. For so many of them, they work so hard to bring kids to therapy, to follow up therapy, but they need time where they can just be at home with their other kids or put things into practice. So, yeah, they're all having days here or a couple of days here or time off, but certainly time over Christmas.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, it's hard to even imagine what the Christmas break is going to look like. Certainly speaking from a Victorian perspective, I must admit. What, just before we go, Narelle, what do you do to recharge your batteries?
I tend to be the sensory seeker that likes getting out and outside. So either bushwalking over summer, I like going kayaking. And I, even over lockdown, we'd take the kayaks out in the river. It's the best way to socially isolate. There wouldn't seem more people on the river than we normally do. Or go camping over Christmas time, because I like the beach and the sun and that sort of thing. So, yeah, so getting out and doing things. And I know if I don't keep active, then other things, I don't sleep if I don't. So going to the gym after work a couple of times a week and stuff like that are really important for me.
Yeah, good maintenance, good maintenance. All righty, you can have the very last word. You can have the very last word. Maybe maybe your thoughts on, you know, what's important in business.
It's a hub. But I think for me is not letting it take over your life, that we still need to, you need to enjoy what you're doing and enjoy the business. And I think for me, I had a passion about working with kids to start with. And so running a business that does that allows me to enjoy what I'm doing, and I want to come to work and I want it to be successful, and I want to pass that on to someone else. So I think, yeah, enjoy the passion, and when it's not a passion for you, then it's, then for me it'll be time to retire.
Yeah. Oh well, we don't want that happening anytime soon. Just squashing those rumors right now.
No, it's not.
In case anyone's listening. Too busy. Haven't got time to retire.
No.
Thank you so much. It's just been lovely hearing your story, hearing your progress, and onwards and upwards, hey? Let's just get 2020 done. 2021's looking pretty bright and shiny, I reckon.
Yep, I think so. Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. For show notes and other resources, please visit practicemadeperfectpodcast.com. While you are there, you can subscribe for future episodes and continue your business adventure with me. And please be sure to share this and other episodes with your friends and colleagues. The Private Practice Made Perfect podcast is brought to you by Experts on Air Podcast Network.